And welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. I'm Dennis Wu, sitting in with Laura Cruz Acosta, who's here, the director of communication from Sun Metro. Welcome to El Paso Primetime.
Thanks again, Dennis.
It's been a while, and there are so many changes that come into play starting tomorrow, Sunday.
Yes.
Yeah, bud.
Tomorrow. We try to do service improvements every now and then. We look at the entire system and try to see, okay, what's going on out there? Where have they put in traffic signals? Where have they put in school signs, whatever it might be, and how is it impacting our route? Or where have they added new neighborhoods that we need to provide a service to? And so this is what is happening tomorrow. We're looking at some changes on 11 routes throughout the community. That's going to be Route 3, Route 9, 13, 15, 18, 36, 52, 55. And then we have a new route, Route 75. And then we have two routes that are being impacted. I'm sorry, Route 65. I forgot about that one. Yeah. And then one new route, Project Amistad 60. That's a new one for us. Just to talk a little bit about some of the minor changes that you're going to see are probably on Route 3, 9, 13, 15, 18. Those are small tweaks for the most part, 36, 52, 55. Minor schedule adjustments in order to help improve connectivity to some of the other routes, or just tweaks because of construction that's going on in the community. For example, around Route 65, there's a lot of construction going on in that area. It's kind of crazy out there. Mm-hmm. So you're going to see that tweak. Route 9, for example, there's the construction around the ballpark area that is not allowing for Route 4 to provide a service to the Caldwell area, to the San Francisco Historic District. Right. So we've created a slight detour on our Route 9 in order to serve that community. But the more exciting one that we have, or two really, is Route 75, which goes out from the far, far, far east side. It's out there by R.C. Poe and Edgemere, near El Dorado High School. Mm-hmm. We have a new park and ride out there. You can park there and get on the 51 or the 75, or as well, the other new route that we have is Project Amistad Route 60. And just to finish off on Route 75, it goes from the R.C. Poe area out there in the far, far east side, and it comes downtown. It touches over there by Myrtle and Stanton area, out there by the court district areas, mm-hmm. and then comes up to El Paso Community College, to Providence, and up to UTEP. And that one's really an exciting one.
Nice.
And we've been trying to get that one going. It's all about equipment, making sure that we have enough equipment to service the community and manpower. So we have that one that offers service during the peak hours. And then Route 60, which is a Project Amistad route. That one is a partnership that we have between Sun Metro and Project Amistad. That one operates Monday through Friday, and it provides service to this whole new neighborhood out there, practically Horizon City, but it's not. It's actually City of El Paso, around El Dorado Ninth Grade Academy. And so there is this chunk of the community that's missing service because it pops up out of nowhere. You go out to the east side and it's amazing and almost ridiculous the amount of growth that's been popping up out there, and we're trying to catch up on the service that we're providing out there. This is one of the ways that we've been looking at. The trick is finding the equipment. Equipment is always a problem for us. The more the city grows and expands, it becomes harder because we're working with the same number of vehicles that we had about 4 or 5 years ago. We have an increase in number of vehicles. And so it becomes tricky.
It is a tricky situation that you guys are in. It's almost like a catch-22 in that this, and you're right, this town grows so fast. It's like a mushroom.
Exactly.
And eventually what's going to happen is along Loop 375, the Purple Heart Memorial Highway, they're talking about a hospital. They're talking about a community college on the other side of that thing. They're talking about a memorial for all veterans. They're talking about housing, trying to get into Fort Bliss. So you're talking about more growth. Mm-hmm. Northeast, yep. To border that whole region, and how are you going to fix that?
How do you service that area? And actually, we're involved. Thankfully, people are starting to get smarter in terms of thinking. Oh, we should get involved with regards to transportation. So we've been involved with in some of those conversations with, like, as you mentioned, the El Paso Community College out there on Montana, past Global Reach, and on Fort Bliss property, that hospital that they're talking about building.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been in communication with Fort Bliss with regards to their growth and their needs, because they don't have a transportation on Fort Bliss property. They used to. They don't anymore.
Right.
And so they're also requesting service. So we're looking at all the needs of the community. And one of the ways that we are looking to address the growth is through the rapid transit system. And unfortunately, one of the things that's happened is the sequester. I can never pronounce that name.
Sequestration.
Yeah. The sequester has been kind of thrown us off, but we're the federal government really likes our plan. They love the idea of our rapid transit system that we're proposing. So it's just a matter of finding the funds to support that. And we're getting there. And we recently got $10 million from the Federal Transit Administration in the form of a Tiger Grant. It's $10.3 million that we got for the Northeast Transfer Center and Transit-Oriented Development. So the federal government knows that we have these huge plans and knows that we desperately need these funds. So they're working with us. It's just happening at a slower pace than we'd like, and eventually we will get there where we'll provide this rapid transit system to move the community a little bit faster and also move our existing fixed route services out to service these extended neighborhoods to more smaller nodes, really, not bring them all the way downtown, but using our existing fixed route to bring them to central locations throughout different parts of the community. And then from that point, they get on the BRT, the rapid transit system,
right,
and come into the central part of town.
Well, that makes sense to me. You know, I'm looking at a lot of these surface improvements that are really needed, right? And one of them, mm-hmm, is Route 36, Beaumont via Highland.
Mm-hmm.
And adding that Sunday service during Christmas Day and New Year's Day really does accent what people don't realize. There's a lot of us that work on those holidays,
mm-hmm,
and we really need that transportation. I don't even remember how I got here on Christmas, to be honest with you. Now, I live in Central on Route 33, and I know that one runs starting at 9, I have to be here by 9.
Yeah, it can be tricky, and a lot of folks have been asking for this one in particular.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly encourage folks who are regular passengers, they know the system backwards and forwards almost as well as we do, who create the system. And we always encourage them, please let us know. Call our 533-333-3333 number and, hey, tell us, hey, you know what, I noticed that you did this change, or could you please extend this one route by 2 minutes because I'm missing my connection here, or whatever it might be. Let us know about those, because that helps us figure out some of the things that maybe we didn't catch in our analysis, because our planners and our schedulers, they go out there and they ride the bus at all the oddest hours and at different routes and to try to figure out, okay, what is the problem that's going on in this area? We're testing, for example, right now, 75. We've run into some obstacles with regards to that one. And so we're right now we're looking at that one. We know that one's a new one, and we started that one on August 26th, mm-hmm. specifically to help out the university because of the amount of construction that y'all have going on out here. And so because there's so many lost parking spots, we're trying to help out the university too, and also increase our ridership as well, of course.
Right.
But we want to be able to help out the university as well. We're partners in this community, and so we want to be able to say, hey, you can do this. You can ride the bus. You can park and ride. You don't have to circle the parking lots and search for a non-existent lot. But we know that there's obstacles with regards to that route, so we're looking at tweaking that one a little bit. Route 3 is another example of what you're talking about. We got a phone call from a couple of passengers who were saying, hey, I'm missing my connection to routes 4 and or 9. Can you please bring an can you change up something, either Route 4 or 9 or Route 3? And so we shifted Route 3 in order to address the connection concern that they had in the first trips.
Yeah. See, with the number 33 that mm-hmm. runs the first trip in the morning at – well, it hits my neighborhood at 5:59 to 6:03.
Mm-hmm.
When it gets downtown at 6:27, I miss the 10 as it's pulling out, the 33 is pulling in.
Oh, no.
I mean, it's right, just boom, boom. That's and it never used to be like that. All of a sudden, there was like, I guess something got tweaked with the 10
yeah.
to leave a little earlier because it used to leave at 6:33. So I knew I had that 3-minute window.
Yeah. And that and those small tweaks can make a huge difference.
Yeah, it really can. So, yeah. Again, I didn't mean to interrupt, Laura, but I think it's a wonderful idea. If you're a rider and you see things that you think are a little minor,
mm-hmm.
feel free to call 533-3333 and just voice your opinion.
Yeah, voice your opinion. And you can also voice your opinion on our Facebook page. We do share all of the information with our planning and scheduling. Any problems that you have, we always try to address it as quickly as possible on Facebook. As well as our 533 number. You put in a formal customer service report when you phone call or, you know, let us know. All of our Facebook, we email, we send off the complaints immediately to whichever department it applies to. So it helps.
One of the things that people are still asking about in Central mm-hmm. is what's going on with the Five Points Transit Terminal and mm-hmm. how the renovations are going to best benefit them in 2014.
Sure, sure. Well, one of the reasons there's a couple of reasons that the renovations that we are doing the renovations at Five Points. One of the primary reasons is that we're going to bring in the rapid transit system into that terminal. Actually, it's going to be a connection point for 3 of the rapid transit systems corridors. It's going to be the connector for Dyer, Montana, and Alameda. And Alameda is going to actually start construction in the next coming year. In 2014 is when we hope to start construction on that one. And so that one, we need to prepare that transfer center for the articulated buses. These are 60 feet long. And right now, the way that it was set up, well, not anymore because it's under construction, but prior to the construction, if you looked at the transfer center, it was a sawtooth bay, meaning it looked like little teeth. If you looked above mm-hmm. over the transfer center, it looked like it had little teeth where the bus would pull in. And that would mean that the back of the bus would be sticking out of a 60-foot bus because right. the average size of a bus is 40 feet. So we had to get rid of it. We had to remove the sawtooth bays and even those out. Also, the weight of a bus, people don't understand, the weight of a bus is pretty extensive. You know, when you're driving down an asphalt road that is really, really bumpy, it's because of the weight of the semis or the weight of buses, the weight of vehicles. It causes the asphalt to become wavy. The weight of it pushes mm-hmm. the asphalt. So we have to prep the ground with cement in order to support the weight of the buses. The other thing that we're doing is putting in a lot of technology. We're putting a lot of connectivity. We're putting preparing the ground for the free Wi-Fi at the terminal, as well as on time, or what is it called? The on-street arrival display displays that'll tell you the bus is 10 minutes away, 5 minutes away. There's a lot of back door technology that you have to put in, a lot of connectors into the ground in order for that to work. So we're preparing for that. We're also going to put a restaurant at that station. We're hopefully be able to provide food, hot food, and drinks and whatnot in that space as well. And we're going to put a driver's lounge because our drivers need to have some place to put their lunch,
right,
and take a very quick break for lunch in order to continue on and keep boosting morale for our drivers as well.
There you go. And it's understandable that drivers need a lot of care, a lot of patience from the passengers. And if you're a driver and, okay, you're not driving, you're not riding the Sun Metro, I understand, maybe, but you should be riding a bus. But my thought here, Laura, if you're a driver, please, please be very respectful of a bus driver. You can't stop that thing. It's just like a locomotive.
Exactly. It's our drivers, our bus drivers, I honestly believe they have a really tough job. I bless their heart because they have a tough job. They have to deal with the traffic that we're all in. We're all in the same traffic. But these folks are actually having to slam on their brakes because somebody cut them off, and the amount of weight that they're carrying, not only the vehicle itself, but the amount of folks that they're carrying sometimes. If they slam on the brakes, that means all that weight has to stop, and it doesn't stop on a dime. Mm-hmm. It can't turn on a dime. It can't stop on a dime. And so whenever things like the rains that we had a couple of weeks ago, that throws everything off. And safety is our number one priority because we're not just going from point A to point B to satisfy our own needs. No, we're moving mom, dad, son, daughters, grandma, grandpa from point A to point B, and they are precious cargo to us as well. So we want to be very careful. And when somebody cuts us off or doesn't allow us to get into a lane that we need to get into, it becomes dangerous.
Yes, I understand that completely. Laura Cruz Acosta is our guest this afternoon on El Paso Primetime. We've been talking about service improvements for Sun Metro. We're also talking about trying to be safe with our bus friends out on the freeways, out on the roads, wherever we go. And one of the things to also consider here is the cost effectiveness of being a rider Monday through Friday, at least. What warms my heart is the amount of traffic that's now using the park and ride at the Eastside Terminal.
Yes. The Eastside Terminal is one of our 6 park and ride locations, and we're increasing the number of park and ride locations, which is very cool. We are actually offering park and ride service with a direct bus route service to the UTEP Games that is happening today, and I'm hoping that some of the listeners actually use the system. If they haven't gotten to the game yet, maybe they'll ride the system. We have 6 park and ride locations. The east side is one of them. We have also the west side terminal out there off of Remcon near Mesa. It's behind the Walmart there. Mm-hmm. And then the Mission Valley, the Alameda and Zaragoza intersection. That's where we have a park and ride as well. The northeast transit terminal we have out there on Diana and Dyer.
Right.
And then the east side, as you mentioned, is out there by Sunmount near Cielo Vista. And then the newest one that we have is the Edgemere and RC Poe out there by El Dorado High School. The last one that we have is the Union Plaza Transit Terminal downtown. And that one is off of San Antonio. We have all these park and rides. You can go there, get to and from school, work, wherever you need to go. By there's always an express route from these locations, so you can get to and from during the week or even during the weekends. And also, especially, we always encourage it, especially during UTEP football games.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's always a great way to do it. People in Dallas-Fort Worth do it whenever mm-hmm. they go to the Cowboy games.
Mm-hmm.
They'll take that ride through Arlington and get to the game like they're supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
Reliance Stadium in Houston, you have the same kind of shuttle service. So why wouldn't you do that here in El Paso?
Exactly.
It makes sense to me.
Yeah.
That way you don't have to worry about, oh my gosh, is somebody going to hit my car? Where are the car keys? Where is this, that, and the other?
Where am I going to park? It's $10 to park around here, around the campus. And at most of our locations, it's free, with the exception of one, which is the Union Plaza Transit Terminal. It's $6 to park there, but that's cheaper than $10. And then our trip to get on the bus round trip is $3 flat rate, and you don't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
You get here, and it's easy peasy. We always encourage folks who want to know more about our park and ride. We do have a website. It's sunmetro.net/football. And you go there and you can find out all about our football service.
One of the things I like about your website as well is that when you click on any of the routes, they come up as PDFs, and you can actually download those onto your smartphone.
Yes.
So you'll always have that schedule and then just update it as you guys update.
Mm-hmm. It's so easy. And if you've never been, you can use that if you know your standard routes, your regular routes that you ride. If you've never ridden the bus, you can also use our Google Transit program that we have on our website. Super easy. You can download the application, Google Maps, and it has a transit option for you. And in El Paso, we have all that stuff. So it's easy.
Yep, it really is. One of the things that I need to brag about for you guys is the ease of taking these buses once you get down to the downtown terminal. There were a couple of UTEP students here who wanted to go to the Bronco because they'd heard about it. They didn't know how mm-hmm. to get there. And I just happened to be at the Glory Road. I was taking the 204 mm-hmm. to go downtown to take the 33 home. And instead, I took the 3
okay.
because I brought them with. I said, look, I'll go to the Bronco with you. I'll show you where to get off. And he got off right there at the Bronco. These guys are like, hey, man, this is so cool.
Yeah.
Now, how do we get back? And just, there's the bus stop. Get back on it. It'll take you back to the deal. You find the 3. Just tell them that you're going back downtown. You're good.
It's so easy. I think a lot of folks are just afraid of the unknown. And we have on YouTube, we have a YouTube channel. Look it up on our on YouTube, Sun Metro. We have a YouTube channel. And we have a how-to ride video. You can learn how to ride. It's so easy. It's just a matter of educating yourself and getting over your fear to get lost maybe a little bit in this great town.
Yeah, it really is a neat place. You can even get out to the outlet mall on a weekend, come mm-hmm. back, go to the Bronco if you want, or go to the Sledder Mission,
mm-hmm.
come back, and go anywhere from anywhere. The beautiful thing is that you offer the daily pass,
mm-hmm.
the weekly pass,
yes.
and the monthly pass, plus the senior citizens and
reduced
students get
fares.
That whole thing too, right?
Correct. Reduced fares are available. Students, they just have to show their student ID. They don't have an ID. We can get one for them for free with just some paperwork, easy paperwork.
Cool deal. Anything else?
All of this can be found on our website, sunmetro.net. 533-3333 is every time you can find all of that information.
Wonderful stuff. Laura Cruz Acosta has been our guest on El Paso Primetime. We've been talking about the service improvements that start tomorrow. If you need that information, it'll be up on our website and also the link to sunmetro.net. Laura, anytime.
Thank
as
you,
we
Dennis.
Get closer and closer to the holidays, I'm sure things are going to change again too.
Yes.
So, mi casa,
yes.
su casa.
Thanks, Dennis.
You're welcome. Laura Cruz Acosta is the Director of Communication to Sun Metro. If you need more information, 915-533-3333 or sunmetro.net. Time now for Primetime Postscript with Mike Cuthbert.
This is Primetime Postscript. I'm Mike Cuthbert. Anthropologist Adrienne Kepler has spent more than half her life on a quest to catalog the contents of the world's first natural history museum. Kepler tells producer Adam Schwartz how her diligence ultimately paid off in the publication of her book, Holofousikon the Lavarian, an 18th century English institution of science, curiosity, and art.
Anthropologist Adrian Kepler spent 40 years tracking down the collection of the Holofousikon, an 18th century London museum. You could call her, as I did, an ethnographic detective.
Yes, I will accept that title.
Kepler is a curator at the Smithsonian Institution and a leading authority in the art and culture of the Pacific Islands. A lively woman in her late 70s, she recently gave a public lecture at Indiana University about her quest to assemble the Holofousikon's lost collection.
But where are all these specimens and objects today? What happened to the more than 7,000 lots that were sold at auction and dispersed around the world? Well, this has been part of my research for 4 decades.
Her 4-decade search culminated in a coffee table-sized book with some 1,000 photos titled Holofousikon, the Lavarian Museum. Lavarian in the title refers to the museum's founder, English collector Ashton Lever. He called his collection Holofousikon from the Greek, meaning embracing the whole of nature. When Lever opened the Holofousikon in 1775, it offered a popular alternative to the British Museum, which catered mainly to aristocrats and scientists doing research.
And so it was probably the first important museum to which anyone could go. He did have a little charge. I think it was 2 and 6. And he opened it to anybody who was interested, scientists, children, jaded socialites, who all came to look at his very interesting materials that embraced all of nature.
In the future, one of those anthropologists will be IU doctoral student Teresa Wilkins, who flew in from Florida to attend Dr. Kepler's lecture.
My whole life is kind of devoted to looking at the provenance of cook pieces in particular. I'm a huge fan of Adrian's.
Ultimately, Lever couldn't afford to operate the Holofousikon and closed it after 30 years. The collection was divided into 7,000 lots and sold at auction. Kepler's task was to find where the pieces had gone.
I think it is like a detective. You find a dead body, and then you say, well, where do I start?
She started by rounding up the auction catalogs. Crisscrossing the globe, she eventually turned up 12 of them.
And there's one in Australia, there's one in Vienna, there's one in the British Museum.
She knew that the collection had been auctioned off to 140 purchasers. She had to find out who the purchasers were, what items they bought, and even what the items were called.
Like, was this cup called a cup or was it called a paper stand, you know?
In her detective work, Kepler had an ally, a young 18th century artist named Sarah Stone. Stone had painted hundreds of watercolors of the museum's objects, all done in meticulous detail.
She was so precise that if, for example, an object had 17 points on it, you know, she usually did the 17 points.
Although Kepler's book on the Holofousikon is finished, her quest to find the still-missing pieces continues.
Every museum I go to, I'm sort of looking for those things that have been illustrated and not yet found. It's one of those things that you'll never be done.
This has been Primetime Postscript, made possible by AARP, and today, Adam Schwartz. To hear more stories and postscripts, please visit aarp.org/radio.
Thanks for listening to this edition of El Paso Primetime. Have a great weekend.